The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. I hope I can read my handwriting. My eyes are moving about a bit, so it'll be fine. So what I wanted to talk about today, because this is our celebration for Avalokiteshvara, and as you all know, Avalokiteshvara is about compassion. But what I wanted to talk about today specifically was compassion for the people we live with in our everyday life. Okay? I think it's really good to have a broad mind and not be insular and cut off from the world. We were talking about this a little bit with a retreat guest this morning. You know, monks, we don't cut ourselves off from the world. It's a little different path is all. Okay? I think it's a good thing to care about the state of the world, the state of our environment, and the myriad injustices that need righting in our world. And I really think a lot of people who work on those things, because they're very difficult issues. Avalokiteshvara listens to the cries of the world and pours her water of compassion on an often parched world that is suffering. So we all know there's a lot of suffering in this world, but there is compassion. And of course, that compassion is within every one of us. So the world cries out for compassion. There's also a subtler aspect to compassion. In some ways, I think it's maybe a little harder to practice. Well, maybe not for you, because we're all different, but I find this subtler aspect of compassion. And I call this subtler aspect of compassion, compassion for the people we live our daily lives with. So this is your partner, your family, the people you work with, your small community of friends, your sangha. Okay? Again, this is me, but when you live with people on a daily basis, you can, or at least sometimes, you don't fully appreciate the jewel that you have right in front of you. Okay? So in some ways, it's maybe easier for some of us to project compassion out to the suffering world. But those that are right around us, it's a little subtler, a little possibly more difficult. It's, you know, we have this human thing of taking things for granted. And also, we're not always grateful for what we have right in front of us because we're looking out. Okay? To read from a book that talks a little about this. This is Buddha's Daughters. Okay, it's a collection of different Buddhist women of their wisdom. And this particular article is called Living Love. And it's by Sharon Salzberg. Sharon Salzberg was one of the founders of IMS, International Meditation Society. And Sharon Salzberg studied with some of the great meditation teachers in India in the 1970s. So she's very fortunate. One of which was Goenka. And also she has written a number of books about loving kindness. So many of you may be familiar with her. But she's a very good teacher, you know, very, very good writer. Okay. So in this article called Living Our Love, she says, "We once brought one of our teachers to the United States from India. After he had been here for some time, we asked him for his perspective on our Buddhist practice in America. While he was mostly very positive about what he saw, one critical thing stood out. Our teacher said that those practicing here in the West sometimes remind him of people in a rowboat. They row and row and row with great earnestness and effort, but they neglect to untie the boat from the dock. You know the problem? Okay. He said he noticed people striving diligently for powerful meditation experiences, wonderful transcendent, whatever that word is, going beyond space, time, body, and mind, but not seeming to care so much about how they relate to others in a day-to-day way. How much compassion do they express towards the plumber who is late or the child who makes a mess? How much kindness? How much presence? The path may lead to many powerful and sublime experiences, but the path begins here with our daily interactions with each other. So, and I've actually heard or read about a number of other Asian teachers who have come here and said that, you know, we kind of want to, in the West, we want to go right to wisdom, generosity, and precepts, morality, are kind of, well, we'll pick those up later. It doesn't quite work that way. Okay? So I think this, as Sharon Salzberg was saying, this path in the beginning, you know, of paying attention to our life around us, I think it's important in the beginning. I think as we go on, it's essential. And I think in the end, that's where we want to be. Paying attention to our interactions with beings. So, as I said before, it's in some ways easier to be compassionate, caring, and kind to beings who live at a distance from the place of our daily lives. We don't live with them, you know. We don't see them in their ups and downs, their bad days, their bad hair days, their frustrations, their moods. Sometimes the people we live with are disappointing, rude, curt, unkind, and occasionally angry. Okay? When it comes down to it, most of us are not saintly. Even if we do have a steady meditation practice and are actively trying to keep the Buddhist precepts, we're not saints. I'm not condoning all our shortcomings, okay? And also, I'm not trying to paint the picture that everybody that we live with all the time is miserable, difficult. But it's just, you know, some of the time there are these bumps that we have with people around us. If any of us does something that is not preceptual, we break a precept, there's a karmic consequence. That's the way it is. That's Buddhism. That's what we believe in. You don't get away with anything. Okay? And I don't believe that it's good to say in violent and abusive, unethical relationships, you know, something there has to be really looked at and addressed. Because sometimes things just don't work out with people. But a lot of times they do. And still there's all these bumps we come along. So I think that this area of bumps that we have with those that we live and practice and work with is something that we can shine the light of compassion on. I think it's really important that we can meditate and breathe in our disappointments and frustrations with those around us. And if we can just take a pause and not react to disappointment with more disappointment, fixing the person who has disappointed us as a disappointing person. Because we do that, kind of fix, you know, in this ever-changing world, we sometimes fix things that actually shouldn't be fixed. If we can sit still enough to see frustration as our reaction, the dots don't connect of this person being the cause. You know, they're the one that's the problem. I think we might see that there's a choice on our part to be frustrated, to be disappointed. You know, there's some kind of choice mechanism going on there. And if we're caught up in the game of people measuring up to us, I don't know that people will ever meet our bar, our expectations. Oh, my story of my senior year in college here. So when I was a senior in college, I was a bit of a dropout, nonviolent revolutionary. I don't, you know, quite how to term it. I was involved in the peace movement. Well, my friends weren't directly the friends that I lived with, these people I'd known for quite a number of years. My good friends, they weren't kind of actively in that, so I thought, well, I should move over here because there's these people who really kind of engage in that all the time, and that's what I need, and I need that atmosphere. So I moved out, and I moved in with these other people who I thought were doing all these things, and actually I got there and they weren't doing anything. I mean, they were good people, but there wasn't anything special going on. You know, we weren't having heavy discussions every night and trying to solve the problems of the world. They were just people, okay? So I decided to move back with my friends, which is pretty gully of me. You know, they had me back no problem. I had to live in the barbecue room in the back outside and patch the roof and all that, but that was okay. Yeah, they just, for some reason they didn't have a problem with me, and actually I could be who I was. I found with them, you know, I had was kind of on a different track, and it was okay with them. So it was a good experience for me. Okay, I think the other thing that happened that summer was I was hiking in the Sierras. Of that summer, and the fellow I went with, he only made it one day with me, and so I kept going on my own. And I hit a part of the Pacific Crest Trail that wasn't. You had to use compasses and kind of there was no trail. You know, you had to just get from point A to B. So I met this father son and the son's friend, and they kindly invited me to walk with him. It was actually through rattlesnake country, according to the book. So I was very grateful. Okay, so we hiked down into the area, and we were around the campfire that night, and they're very kindly sharing their food with me. And then it comes to, where are you from? You know, and I think the father is the first one who responded. And he was from the area where I went to school. Oh, I asked him, where did he work? Well, he worked at FMC. And actually, a month before that, we had been thrown in jail for blocking the entrance of FMC. And I was going to tell him that, you know, because I realized that this is a really decent person. You know, he's kind to me. I don't have to push anything in anybody's face or... you know, so it was just good to realize this is a good person, you know. Okay. We talk in Buddhism about things just as they are. So talk about insight into things just as they are. Just being able to see things as they are. Not taking anything away, not adding things. Well, I think we can also say this with people. We can see people just as they are. Not adding things, not taking things away. If we can be patient enough to see the bigger picture, okay, we see that people suffer. People sometimes are trapped by their suffering. Human beings can also be well-intentioned, kind, generous, and compassionate. So You know, many of us are Buddhist. We're very fortunate. We know we have a common something we're trying to do in our lives. Okay? So we can help each other with that. People also have a great capacity to change. We're not the only ones who can change. People have this capacity to change because, in fact, life is changing. And a lot of people cotton on to that, you know, along the way. So when you think about our great Buddhist ancestors, you go through the Denkuroku, which is about our different Buddhist ancestors, you see that they didn't necessarily start out as saints. You know, a number of them had some real difficulties. Greed, hate, and delusion. They really were involved in that in some way. And yet something happened, and they were able to change that. So many of these people made a lot of mistakes, and yet they were able to get through it, cut through it. Okay. So when we just don't jump to conclusions about each other, a space opens to view things from another perspective. Sometimes, as we know, people around us are unskilled in what they're doing, meaning the way they are, you know, impolite, rude, or again, even angry. That's as it is. Okay? We don't have to deny that. But sometimes we read into the situation. Okay? We have this thing, if we're not careful, that this is what I see, this is my, you know, this is what I got in my mind, this is what's going on. I would go so far to say as we occasionally misread situations. At least I do. You know. One thing is we don't always have all the facts. There could be a lot going on, and we're just seeing a little bit of something. Sometimes we're emotional. And I don't know about you, but when I'm emotional, I don't see very correctly. Okay. And I'm not particularly talking about the emotion of sadness here. It's kind of a different thing, but just, you know, we're kind of worked up. So I feel very fortunate in my life to have parents, school teachers, athletic coaches, believe it or not, and religious teachers who are willing to put up with a lot from me. Okay, they just put up with a lot of stuff. For some reason, they were patient. You know? When I was a young boy, I guess I was somewhat a talented athlete. I mean, what does that mean when you're 14 years old? But I was a prima donna. I was terrible. If I didn't get my way, I'd get all upset. And so I graduate from grade school. I'm headed to high school. Okay, and my coach said, "Oh, I'll give you a ride home from practice today." I said, "Okay, you know." So I get in the car, and he drives to my house. He stops the car, and he says, "Wait a minute, I want to talk to you about something." So he laid it out for me. You know, he told me, you know, kind of what I was doing. He's also very skillful, and he said, you know, if you continue in this way, you won't make it very far in high school athletics because they're not interested in prima donnas. You know, it's a bigger pool, and they're just not interested. Well, I was pissed. For about 2 weeks, I was really upset at this guy. And then, well, I'll say I was upset at him, but actually something in me knew he was right. I just knew it. And, of course, he got my greed up. I wanted to go on because I wanted to, at that point in my young life, I wanted to be a professional athlete. So, you know, I realized he was right. And I somewhat changed, although change takes a while. And, You know, you need to revisit things on different layers. But I feel very grateful to that person. Okay. So given the fact that these people were patient with me, it seems like maybe I could be patient with other people. In monastic life, we don't pick our fellow monks to be with. It's really more that we came here to practice, and these other people come. So we got all kinds of, we're all different kinds of people. Okay? My teacher used to give me a bad time about having been an athlete, but she was just joshing me actually. And she, you know, she'd occasionally let me watch a bit of a game on TV, you know, when nobody else was watching. Because, you know, she didn't mind, but, right. But we're all different kinds of people, okay? And I think occasionally we get on each other's nerves, at the very least, or we have some difficulties with each other, or we see things different. Okay? We bring different things into the equation. Well, maybe on some level it will always be this way. Okay, people are just as they are in a way. Okay? It's not our job to change them. What it is our job to do is to change us. So that changes that relationship. And you find that people that you had a hard time with maybe in time become your good friends. Because you just realize there's something bigger, there's something more. And that thing wasn't really that important, whatever it was we were uptight about. So what we try to do, and we aren't always successful, but is have this bigger picture. Okay? And it's about this unconditional kind of caring and love that we have for each other. It's more than liking each other, although that's helpful. Okay? But it's this unconditional place. My teacher used to tell a story to us, this is from Master Jiyu Kenet, about two, I think they were Christian monks, who sat across from each other in the dining hall. And I think they were in an order that didn't speak, probably a very cloistered order that didn't talk to each other. And they were together, sitting across from each other, I don't know, 40, 50 years. And one day, one of the monks threw his soup at the other monk. I hope it wasn't hot, you know. That could be really not so good. But he just got, you know, because what had happened is this other monk was slurping his soup all these years, and it just bugged the heck out of him, you know. So he finally just, well, I think the reason she told us that was because it doesn't have to be that way, okay? You don't have to wait 50 years to work something out. You know, people who have difficulties with each other can sit down and talk about them, hopefully work them out. There has to be more than talk. You know, talk in very many senses is cheap. Ultimately, I think we have to bring respect and compassion to our relationship as a solution. Because we can talk until we're blue in the face. We ultimately, and the talk can be good, but ultimately, respect and compassion. And also, I find that when you've got two people, okay, that each one has to make some movement. Okay? Compromise. You know, it's not a bad word. Concessions. We have to make concessions about each other. Well, we do. Okay? What doesn't work as a way of living harmoniously with people is to determine that when they are nice and kind to me, I will be compassionate towards them. It just won't work. I mean, we just wait and wait and wait because we got a fixed idea and we're not seeing things just as they are. So I've already mentioned how meditation practice can help to break down habitual reactions to situations. You know, just responding, boom, you know, something happens, we respond. Well, with meditation, we begin to learn that we can pause a second, just a second even, and it can change what we do and how we see things. We take the meditation off the cushion and practice the mind and body of meditation throughout our day. That's the real point of meditation. It's not to look holy sitting on a cushion, which as we get older, we don't look very holy anyway. So by staying as centered as we can, things and people don't catch us so much off balance as they have in the past. And we can possibly see a bigger picture. But with a momentary pause in the heat of something, difficulty, if we take that momentary pause, wisdom and compassion can come in, because they have a space to come into. Okay. The precepts, okay, are also a wonderful help to live in a compassionate way. I mean, that's what they're about. They're living in a way that doesn't harm others and tries to, best we can, to live harmoniously with other people. So for what I'm talking about, I just wanted to talk about two of the precepts, because in a way you could apply all the precepts to this. But the two precepts are do not speak against others, and do not be proud of yourself and devalue others. So in the precept, do not speak against others, I would emphasize the word against. Okay? Precepts are dynamic, okay? Because they're about life, about living. They're dynamic. And this precept about not speaking against others is not about a vow of quietism or not speaking ever. Sometimes we have to talk to others about others to figure out what in the heck is happening. Okay, we have to do that to get perspective and advice. And what's important, though, in this conversation is that we not team up against others or condemn others. Regardless of what appears to be going on, we have to clearly acknowledge the Buddha nature of others. If we're constantly in a conversation about the faults of others, this is a clue. Okay? So if we're constantly doing this, I think maybe we're not looking at ourselves. Okay? The old saying that if you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all, it's actually good advice. But it's not saying don't say anything at all. It's just saying if you don't have something good to say. So even, you know, in talking about others, not against others, but by talking about others, even if it's something difficult, bothersome, troubling, we can say it in a skillful way. Okay, and we can bring skillfulness and tender speech to bear. Because those things break the chain of karma. Just by doing that, by not just prejudging, you know, but by bringing skillfulness, skillful means, and tender speech. I also want to say that speech can be skillful, tender, and direct, and to the point. Okay? Sometimes we have to do that. Sometimes we have to talk to somebody, we have to say something, and it can be kind, but it can be direct. And that's the real art. So I've read this story a number of times from the Buddha's life, but I just find it amazing, so I'm going to read it again to you. Okay, on one occasion, the Buddha was invited by a Brahmin for alms to his house. As he was invited, the Buddha visited his house. So he was given an invitation. He was going to go. Instead of entertaining him, the Brahmin poured forth a torrent of abuse with the filthiest of words. If you read the life of the Buddha, there were some pretty, you know, hairy incidents. So the Buddha politely inquired to the Brahmin, "Do visitors come to your house, good Brahmin?" And he said, "Oh, yes, you know." "What do you do when they come?" "Oh, well, I prepare a sumptuous feast. If they fail to turn up, please, why, we gladly partake of it." So it's a Brahmin saying, "We gladly partake of this feast that people haven't showed up for." So what the Buddha responds with is, he says, "Well, good Brahmin, you have invited me for alms and entertained me with abuse. I accept nothing. Please take it back." And he wasn't, you know, he wasn't rude. He just had to say it, because we're not, you know, we don't need to be taking abuse. It's not necessary. It's not like a true humility or something. Okay, so sometimes we need to say something. Okay, so in the precept, "Do not be proud of yourself and devalue others," it's pride and devaluing others, I think, that create karma. So those are the, for me, those are the key words right now: pride and devaluing. The Buddhist perspective is not to devalue others. People, things, our own selves. You know, we talk about turning the stream of compassion within and how essential that is, that you need to do that, because it's very hard to turn it out if you don't turn it in. And you know, some of us are terrible about devaluing ourselves. All things are Buddha nature, undivided. All things are interconnected. And when we do not respect what is external to us, and actually internal, we are defaming part of ourselves. All beings have self-worth. All things have self-worth. A low opinion of ourselves is best let go of. A high opinion of ourselves, it might be necessary for some of us for a while to realize that we have a self. Maybe we've been so, people have treated us so awful that we need to get a self, you know. You know, we've come from a place of low regard. But that, too, should be let go of. Personally, I find having a big me just leads to more karma, more suffering. I think truth and justice are important. But every matter of our everyday life is not a battle for truth and justice. I don't know, at least the way I see it, you run across a lot of different ways of doing things. And sometimes we're better off accepting and bowing to another's way. I'm not saying, talking about somebody taking you over, but you know, it's just different ways to go at something. Sometimes we just need to hear and try it out. In our practice, we say that training and enlightenment are one and the same, and that enlightenment is to be found in our everyday lives. So the fertile ground of compassion is right in front of us. It's also out there. But you want to take advantage of what's right in front of you, because it's what you have. In actual fact, you don't know how long you'll have it. So, you know, I think too, if we can learn to care more about those around us, it'll make the world a better place. So I'm just going to end by a little piece from Zen Master Dogen, and it's from the Shishogi, Life and Death. Okay. See, the way to Buddhahood is easy. They who do not perpetuate evil, they who do not try to grasp at life and death, but work for the good of all living things with utter compassion, giving respect to those older and loving understanding to those younger than themselves. They who do not reject, search for, think on, or worry about anything have the name of Buddha. You must look for nothing else. Very difficult. But I think we can do it. Thank you.